Reversible birth control, what is it? Is it right for you? Well, we're going to talk about that today on the Larry Mueller Show. John Munson in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. We have an expert, Dr. Eliza Bennett, here to tell us more about the benefits and long-lasting effects of long-acting reversible contraceptives, otherwise known as LARCs. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio today. Dr. Bennett is the Clinical Assistant Professor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Thanks so much for being here with us today, Dr. Bennett.
Thank you, John.
First of all, let's define what we mean by long-acting reversible contraceptives.
Well, long-acting reversible contraception is sort of exactly what it says. It's birth control that lasts for a long time, but when a woman is wanting to have a baby or done using that form of contraception, it's fully reversible. So they return to normal fertility once the contraceptive device is removed.
And what are the advantages of this type of contraception?
The main advantage is that it's more effective than other short-acting methods. So long-acting methods have a failure rate or an unintended pregnancy rate that are all well under 1%, whereas shorter-acting methods like pills or rings or patches have failure rates that's more on the order of about 9%. And then immediate-acting methods such as condoms have an extremely high failure rate, somewhere in the 15 to 20% range.
And as I was reading up on this, preparing for today's show, I also noted that these LARCs have the same failure rate as sterilization. That surprised me.
Yeah. I often tell people, so the very most effective long-acting reversible contraceptive is the Nexplanon. It has the lowest failure rate, and I often tell people that it's equivalent to a vasectomy, which is the other sort of gold standard of extremely low failure rate form of contraception.
Now, according to a recent New York Magazine publication, LARCs have become quite common among young women today, and the spread of, for example, the IUD, the intrauterine devices. There's even something called IUD evangelism. Could you explain the recent growth in interest? What's behind this?
Well, so what happened was in 2000, the a levonorgestrel IUD called Mirena was approved for use in the United States. It had been used in Europe for about 10 years prior to that. And the Mirena IUD was different than IUDs prior to that in that it has a small dose of hormone that is slowly released to the lining of the uterus. And that IUD sort of changed women's experience with IUDs. Because that hormone releases to the lining of uterus, it decreases the amount of bleeding that people have when they have an IUD in place. And sometimes women stop having their period altogether. And this turns out to be a pretty desirable side effect for a lot of women. And I think because of that, because women have a really good experience with this device, not to mention that they don't have to remember to take a pill every day, they don't have to, you know, be encumbered with going to the doctor for a shot every 3 months, it just lasts for 5 years without having to think about it, those benefits, a lot of women I feel like think are so great that they feel like they have to tell other women about it.
And IUDs fell out of favor in the United States because of problems with early models in the 1970s, didn't they?
Right. So there was a IUD called the Dalcon Shield, which was a dangerous device and a bad product design that resulted in it wasn't a very good IUD. It didn't prevent pregnancies very well, and it resulted in a series of septic abortions or infections inside of the uterus associated with pregnancies that resulted in the deaths of about 18 to 20 women. That device was really poorly tested. It was put on the market without a lot of vetting. It had some really serious design flaws in that it didn't prevent pregnancy well, and it also had a braided filament which allowed bacteria to enter into the uterus. Plus, the material the filament was made out of sort of harbored bacteria. So all of those things were sort of a perfect storm to have a really bad device. And at that time in the 1970s, 1970s, devices weren't required to go through FDA approval. And so that was why they were able to put it on the market without really vetting it well or testing it well. But because of that device, the Dalcon Shield, IUDs sort of fell out of favor. They were perceived as very dangerous. And women stopped using them in the United States. And in the 1980s, there were no IUDs available on the market for a time period. One of the good things that the Dalcon Shield did for us, though, was make the medical community realize that medical devices need testing, they need FDA approval, they need to be evaluated just as thoroughly as medications need to be. And so now our newer devices have been tested thoroughly, they have long track records. As I said, the Mirena was available in Europe for about 10 years before it was FDA approved in the U.S. and now has been available in the U.S. for 15 years and has an excellent track record in terms of risk of infection and effectiveness in terms of preventing pregnancy.
Are there side effects? For example, for a long time, people have talked about the side effects of the pill, for example. Are there side effects with IUDs that we should know about?
Sure. You know, any medicine, any device that you use is going to have some side effects. So the there's sort of three different categories of long-acting reversible contraception. There's the contraceptive implant, which is a rod that inserts underneath the arm. It's called Nexplanon. It lasts for 3 years, very effective at preventing pregnancy, but it can result in irregular periods, and that's sort of the most common complaint that women have with it. Then there are the hormonal IUDs, Mirena, Skyla, and Lileta, and they last between 3 and 5 years. They all release a small amount of progesterone to the lining of the uterus, and they can cause some irregular bleeding. And in many women, the Mirena will cause their periods to stop altogether. Some women perceive this as a benefit, but other women don't like that. And then the Paragard IUD is the non-hormonal long-acting reversible contraceptive. It has copper to prevent pregnancy. And it doesn't change people's periods in terms of making them more or less regular. People usually stay with the same cycle they have, but initially can cause some significant increase in the amount of bleeding that women have during their periods. That usually resolves after about 6 months, though.
And I understand that and I hope I got this right, that the copper IUD is actually can actually also be used for emergency contraception.
Yeah, so the copper IUD is effective for emergency contraception up to 5 days after unprotected intercourse, and it is the most effective form of emergency contraception that we have. It works in 99% of the time. And the benefit of the copper IUD is that not only does it work right then for emergency contraceptive, but then it can work for 10 years if the woman chooses to continue that device.
What are the risks involved here?
So anytime we put anything inside of the body, at that moment that we put it in and for about 3 weeks afterwards, there is a risk of infection. It's very small, but there is a chance that bacteria could get put into the uterus and a woman could get an infection at that time. There's the irregular bleeding that I talked about. Every now and then, very rarely, about 1 out of 1,000 women will actually have an IUD perforate the wall of the uterus or travel through the wall of the uterus and end up into the abdomen. In those cases, we do have to do a surgery to remove the IUD. But as I said, that's a really rare complication.
I want to invite our listeners to join the conversation here this morning. We're talking with Dr. Eliza Bennett about reversible birth control methods. They're 20 times more effective than other types of contraception, according to all the research that I've seen anyway, and that's a pretty startling statistic. And we're wondering what questions you have about reversible birth control. What concerns do you have? Have you considered LARC methods before? And have you ever talked about reversible birth control with your physician? If so, what was the result? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. The email address, talk@WPR.org. Or you can go to the Larry Miller Show Facebook page and leave your comment or question there. and we'll relay it to our guests and our listening audience. So the are all women candidates for an IUD?
Most women are candidates. There's a few rare exceptions. Obviously, if a woman has an ongoing infection, we wouldn't want to put a foreign body into her uterus. Other reasons why women might choose to use something else or it might not be the best option for them. Women that are born with uterine anomalies, so their uterus isn't a normal shape, are not good candidates for the IUD, but they can get the Nexplanon, the implant that goes under the skin in the arm. Other reasons why women might not choose to use an IUD would be if they have undiagnosed irregular bleeding or irregular menstrual cycles, and we don't know the reason why, because there can be some concerns for possible malignancy, that sort of thing. So that needs to be fully worked up before a woman would undergo treatment with an IUD.
And one of the things that I was reading was that some doctors are resistant to prescribing these. Why is that?
Well, because of the history of the Dalcon Shield, for a long time, OBGYN residents, family medicine, internal medicine residents weren't being trained to place IUDs. And so older physicians may still have that strong memory of the litigation with the Dalcon Shield, of the risk with the Dalcon Shield, and that can inform their own perspective on IUDs. Other reasons... For a long time, it was felt that IUDs weren't appropriate for women who had never been pregnant. More recent data shows that they're very well tolerated with women who have never been pregnant, that they do quite well with them, that their discomfort with insertion and their continuation rates are really the same as women who have had children.
We're talking with Dr. Eliza Bennett, Clinical Assistant Professor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the UW-Madison, about reversible birth control. We'll continue our conversation in just a little bit and take some phone calls. Some calls are coming in now. There's still a line available to you. We'll have Dr. Bennett with us until about 11:45, and then we'll change to a related topic, on the flip side of this, and that is fertility. We'll be looking at that. Later on this morning on the Larry Mueller Show. 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, or find us on Facebook. Look for the Larry Mueller Show. Leave your comment or question there. I'm John Munson, in for Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about reversible birth control options with Dr. Eliza Bennett, Clinical Assistant Professor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We have callers on the line. Let's go to Madison first, where Hillary is with us. Hillary, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, my question is, and I could be wrong, but my recollection was when the commercials started years ago from Arena that it was advertised as an option only for women who'd already had kids, and I'm wondering if that's still correct or if my recollection is wrong, and then what the rationale is if that's the case.
So originally when Mirena was FDA approved, it was approved for women who had already had children. Since Mirena has been on the market in the U.S., it's been used, and there have been multiple studies in women who have never had children. And what those studies have shown is that women do well with it. There is a little bit more pain at the time of insertion. So when we put it inside of the uterus, it can be a more painful process for women who haven't ever had children or a pregnancy. And there may be a slight increase in the risk of expulsion or the IUD falling out of the uterus. That isn't necessarily dangerous, but obviously if the IUD comes out of the uterus, it won't be effective in preventing pregnancy. So all in all, I'd say Mirena is now considered to be an appropriate and excellent option for women who have never had children.
Hillary, thanks. Thanks for your question. Let's go to Delafield next and hear from Anne. Anne, hello. Go ahead.
Hello there. How are you?
Great.
Good. I was calling just to relay my very positive experience with having the Mirena IUD in for 5 years. I was diagnosed with fibroids and had terrible periods that just affected my life. And the Mirena was sort of a stopgap for me. I'm older. I'm 55 now. But it bought me that time so that the fibroids would shrink naturally. So it's a good option for that as well.
And that's an excellent point, Anne. I think I use the Mirena really frequently in women who maybe don't even need to prevent pregnancy, but need to stop bleeding or need to treat some other problem. And it is very effective for treating the bleeding from fibroids. I even at times have used it to treat the precancerous changes that can happen inside of the uterus that can lead to endometrial cancer.
Anne, thanks for sharing your story with us. So the Mirena is good for 5 years. What do you do then? Can you have another one put in, or do you have to go off of it, or what's the situation there?
So it is safe to continue it until women either go through menopause or want to have a child. And so usually if a woman has been using it for 5 years and she would like to continue it, I remove it and replace it all at the same time in the same office visit so they don't have to go through any more procedures than that one office visit to get it removed and replaced.
Is there a certain age group that these devices are work better on, or that it's more optimal for their use?
Well, the group of women that are most affected by unintended pregnancies are women in their early to mid-20s. So that's a really great age group to be targeting with these devices because they're so effective at preventing unintended pregnancy. The other statistic that you referenced earlier is that it reduces pregnancy by or unintended pregnancy by 20% over the other or 20 times over the other devices, the shorter acting methods like the pill. And that was especially borne out. There was a project done in St. Louis called the Choice Project, where they offered free birth control to any women, and there was a really high use of LARC in that group. And in the teen population that they studied, they found that the long-acting reversible contraception was significantly more effective in that group compared to the short-acting methods. Teenagers had a really high failure rate, about twice that of older women when they were using shorter-acting methods. So that group, the teens, are a really great group because, you know, 85% of teen pregnancies are unintended. So that's a group that really needs very effective birth control.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, the number to call to join the program. Kathy has joined us in Madison. Kathy, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question that's also related to teenagers, and forgive me, I came in the middle of the previous answer, but I don't think that you addressed this. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on using it not with an initial goal of birth control, but in terms of helping someone who's having extremely heavy periods.
I think that the Mirena IUD especially lends itself to a really effective treatment for heavy bleeding. Mirena actually went through a secondary FDA approval for treatment of menorrhagia, which is heavy bleeding. So it's actually labeled for that as well. And so it has been shown to decrease the amount of bleeding that women have with their monthly cycles by about 90% by the 6 month time period after it's placed. So it's a great option for teens with heavy periods. Any woman with a heavy period, it's a great option for them. But teens especially, because a lot of times they're participating in things like sports. They, you know, go to summer camp. They do all these sorts of things where they don't have a regular schedule and can't use the pill on a regular basis or just forget. Whereas the Mirena just gives them the option of having something that's there and it just stays there for 5 years, which is a great time frame for most teenagers.
Kathy, thanks so much for your question. 800-642-1234. Valerie is with us in Green Bay. Valerie, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question. I'm an RN, and so I'm always interested in the statistics and some of the problems associated with treatments and processes. And I have had two daughter or daughter-in-laws just in our own family who have used birth control methods for many years and then decided they wanted to have a baby when it's right in their career cycle, and have had miscarriages with the first pregnancy. And I'm wondering how common is that, because it's so sad. They're excited, and this is the new big thing in their life, and then they lose that first baby because their uterus is not used to the cycle.
Yeah. So that is a really sad experience to go through a miscarriage. I'm sorry for your daughters. However, I would say that it's unlikely to be related to birth control. There is not evidence that using contraception increases the risk of miscarriage. We see return to fertility really quickly after the removal of these devices. It's not infrequent for me to have patients come back within a month of having their Mirena removed and already be pregnant. Unfortunately, miscarriage is just a very common phenomenon. And as women age, it becomes more common. So about 15 to 20% of pregnancies will end in miscarriage, but women in their 30s or 40s have an even higher incidence of miscarriage.
Valerie, thanks for your question. I'm wondering about the cost for these devices.
So the devices are pretty expensive, but in general are covered by insurance. The Mirena, it depends on the clinic and the situation where it gets inserted, but with insertion and the device can be around $1,500. Skyla, similar. And the Nexplanon is a little bit less expensive, maybe $1,100 to $1,300. There is a new device called the Lileta, which is a levonorgestrel IUD, very similar to the Mirena. It was just put on the market by a company called Medicines 360. And this is an interesting company that has a goal of providing birth control, specifically levonorgestrel IUDs, at a lower cost. And so they are offering the Lileta through Title 10 clinics at a cost of $50 per device. So that is a really exciting change in the cost structure that just happened in the last couple of months.
800-642-1234. Your questions on reversible birth control this hour for Dr. Eliza Bennett, clinical assistant professor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. 800-642-1234. You can also find the Larry Mueller Show on Facebook and leave your comment or question for Dr. Bennett there. And then a reminder that we'll kind of be flipping this topic around at 11:45 today, and we'll start talking about fertility and different treatments for those who are trying to have children and can't. We had a caller from Madison, Dr. Bennett, who couldn't stay on the line, but who wanted to know if you could address the side effects like weight gain of using reversible birth control.
So weight gain is a common concern that I hear from a lot of women. And it is a difficult thing to study because people tend to gain weight over time, whether or not they're using contraception or not. And so it's difficult to know in a small portion of the population, do devices cause weight gain, or does medication cause weight gain, if it's not an overt thing that happens to all people. In general, though, these devices release a very small amount of hormone into the body, or with the Paragard, no hormone at all. And so there is little effect on metabolism or on weight gain from any of these devices. If there is one that anecdotally I hear people say, oh, I think it's making me gain weight, the Nexplanon, or the insert that goes into the arm, would be the one that people would complain about. However, in the studies, there wasn't a significant increase in weight associated with the Nexplanon.
Caroline from Madison says that she's been on continuous birth control due to endometriosis. She wanted to know if Mirena would be a good option for her.
Yeah, so that's one of the new and exciting things that we're doing more and more with women with endometriosis is using the Mirena IUD in those women. And it has been shown to provide nearly equivalent pain control as opposed to continuous birth control pills, which is what she's using right now. So it's a great option for women with endometriosis, and I've had great success with it in terms of decreasing the amount of pain that women have.
Let's take a call next from Michelle in Madison. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning. I cannot be on the Mirena because I bled with it. which is kind of confusing to me why it stops bleeding in some people. But for me, I had it for 10 months and I bled continuously. And I also had depression with it, which I've never dealt with in my life at all. I can't do the mini pill. And I can't do the regular estrogen pill because I had a stroke last year, and they think it may have been related to that. So I'm about to turn 49, and there's not, I'm probably can't get pregnant anymore, but I don't want to take that chance. And I'm wondering what your recommendation would be for me.
So that you're in a tough situation there with the bleeding and the stroke. I would encourage you, anytime that I have somebody in your age group that's having bleeding, you know, that's sort of ongoing, a lot of times I'll do a full workup because there could be something else going on, such as fibroids or a polyp. So that's definitely something to investigate. But you're right that some women do have bleeding that is annoying and irregular and persistent with the Mirena. It's the minority of women, but maybe, you know, 5 to 10% will have this ongoing bleeding. And usually it isn't heavy, but it's to the point where they don't want to continue the device. And in those women, a lot of times I suggest using, you know, something different. In a 49-year-old woman, you're right, the risk of pregnancy is really low. So using something immediate-acting like condoms is probably as effective as anything else, just because the risk of pregnancy is so low.
Michelle, thanks for sharing with us this morning. Let's go next to Jean in West Bend. Jean, good morning.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to let you know that I had the copper IUD in once I was discovered having fibroids, and I was allergic to copper and never had been tested, and I became very ill. So I recommend people using the copper IUD be tested for their allergies, because I had no idea, nor did my, I mean, there was no reason why anyone would test, but it left me with some pretty serious infections that dissipated, and I still had kids, but it was a really harrowing 4 months. Trying to figure out what was wrong with me.
So you're right. Women that are allergic to copper should not use the copper IUD. Fortunately, you are a very rare bird. It's pretty uncommon that people are allergic to copper. But you're right. If there is a copper allergy or a rare disease called Wilson's disease, those people retain too much copper. They should not use the copper IUD.
Jean, thank you for calling in today. We had a caller, Barbara from Eau Claire, who says that she had a 30-year-old friend who was on Norplant. After going off of it, she started having postmenopausal symptoms. Could you talk about why that might have happened?
So Norplant was an older implant that was available in the mid-90s that was a progesterone-containing rod. There was a series of rods that were inserted in the arm, and it lasted for 5 years. It had a different type of progesterone in it than the Nexplanon has. It's difficult to say what happened specifically in that case, why there would, you know, somebody would have had menopausal symptoms once they discontinued the Norplant. It doesn't, in terms of the Nexplanon or of these devices, they suppress ovulation. They cause the Nexplanon suppresses ovulation. It stops the ovary from producing eggs. But in general, it doesn't affect the brain chemistry over the long term. So menopause from a Nexplanon device would be extremely uncommon and not a causal relationship.
800-642-1234, probably still time to get your question in for Dr. Bennett before we have to let her go at 11:45. One question I had, I mean, we've been talking about long-acting reversible contraceptives for women. Is there anything out there for men?
Well, I mean, I think that's the next frontier in contraception, because men sort of have been, you know, left out of the equation here. And really, a lot of men have a vested interest in preventing pregnancy and would like to have something that they could use themselves. So at this point, there aren't, besides condoms, there are not any effective male contraceptives on the market. However, there are some clinical trials that are starting. There is one that is pretty exciting and is essentially a long-acting reversible contraception for male. It's something called Vasagel or Risug, R-I-S-U-G. It's a process where a polymer is injected into the vas deferens to block the transport of sperm, and then there is a reversing polymer that can be injected. It was developed by an Indian engineer and has been studied in India for a number of years. And then that technology was brought to the U.S. and Canada, and there's currently a foundation that's working on doing clinical trials. So it's a ways away from actually being a reality, but at least there is some work towards trying to get an option for men.
And what about new research on long-acting reversible contraceptives for women? Anything new on the horizon out there that you'd like to share with us today?
Yeah, so there is a company that is associated with MIT, and there was a big splash in the news about 6 months ago about a microchip contraceptive. So it's a device that's going to be a microchip that will be inserted underneath the skin. It uses the same hormone that the birth control, the Mirena IUD and the Skyla use. It's levonorgestrel, which is a progesterone, and the chip has small ampules of 30 micrograms daily of levonorgestrel that are sort of dissolved into the skin into the bloodstream on a daily basis. It can last for up to 16 years, and the idea is that it will be able to be turned on and off through a radio control device. And so the idea with that is that a woman would be able to have a birth control chip that, you know, was underneath the skin in her arm, and then if she didn't need birth control, wanted to have a baby, she could turn it off, get pregnant, and then once she has the baby, turn it back on.
Wow, that sounds pretty futuristic.
It is pretty futuristic, but they're in preclinical testing right now and are planning to go to clinical trials in the next year. So it seems like it's on its way.
Well, we have another caller on her way. Gracie is with us from Racine this morning. Gracie, hello.
Hello, thank you. I have a more cautionary tale. I'm a 63-year-old woman who just a week ago had an embedded IUD removed. It was installed when I was 44, and subsequent doctors had said, oh, don't worry about it, it's not bothering you. Obviously, I haven't been sexually active for 5 years as my husband passed away, and all of a sudden I had this pain, and it turned out it had just embedded itself in my uterus.
Mm-hmm.
So having no need for it, obviously, I was told by the OBGYN who removed it that that was an error on the part of the doctors and that I should have been pushy. Just to let other women know, we really have to take charge of our own health and pay attention to what our body is doing.
Right. So the IUDs are approved for somewhere 5 to 10 years. It depends on the type of IUD. But once they reach their expiration, they really should be removed. Not a good idea to leave them in your body for a long duration.
Dr. Bennett, what would you where would you recommend that people go to find out more about LARCs and about maybe get some background even before they go in to see their doctor?
So there's some good websites out there. Bedsider.org is an excellent website that has really good comprehensive contraceptive information in it, and it is medically accurate and a pretty easy site to navigate. It also has links on that site to providers insert long-acting reversible contraception. And then for a younger population, there's a website called stayteen.org it serves to give contraceptive advice for the teenage and early 20 population. And I think both of those have excellent information, really consumer-based too, so easy to understand. And then the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology has a a section on their website dedicated to long-acting reversible contraception that gets into more technical details, but is a really excellent resource as well.
Well, I was looking at that. There's a really good frequently asked questions list on that website. And by the way, I believe we have that linked to the Larry Mueller Show homepage, or on, excuse me, the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. But it was lengthy. It was technical, but it looked to me like it was perfectly understandable for the average person.
Yeah.
Not everybody has health insurance in spite of all the efforts we've made to the contrary. So what resources are there for women who really could use this kind of thing but just don't have any resources?
So reproductive health care centers that have Title X funding frequently have sliding scale fees for women, because not only are the devices expensive, but the insertion fee can sometimes be expensive. So any Title X clinic or federally qualified healthcare center would be an excellent place to go for women that have limited resources. Frequently, those are Planned Parenthoods or county health departments that are able to provide these devices at lower costs. Also, in the state of Wisconsin, for Wisconsin residents, there's something called Family Planning Only Services that's available to, it's a program through Badger Care, but it's available to women with a higher income than what would normally qualify for Badger Care. And that waiver will provide coverage for contraceptive services, both for women and for men, up to about 250% of the poverty level. And that can be accessed on the Forward Health website. So women can go and get on there and see if they would qualify to be able to have coverage. And then frequently they can take that to any physician that accepts Medicaid, will accept that family planning only services coverage.
Okay, Dr. Bennett, thank you very much for an interesting discussion and for sharing all those resources with us. People can go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and look up some of the things we've been talking about, but I've appreciated our discussion this morning.
Thank you. It's been wonderful to be here.
Dr. Eliza Bennett is the clinical assistant professor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We'll be back in just a moment to kind of take a look at the flip side of this equation, from pregnancy prevention to what about people who want to have children and can't. We'll talk about fertility in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.